Thanks for being with us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, there's not much that can compare to the aroma of bread baking in the oven, is there? Oh, my gosh. Paul Novak is a baking instructor at Madison College. He's the author of A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. We're going to take a look at baking bread with or without yeast. We'll also take your bread baking questions. Has your bread been turning out? Do you have baking questions for Paul? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Paul Novak, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hi, Larry. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I'm wondering, stores are running out of yeast. Did you ever think that would happen?
No. And I didn't realize that Red Star in Milwaukee, they don't make it there. They haven't made it there for a while. So we were very close to a big source, but the Red Star makes it elsewhere. And I'm guessing they make a certain amount, and that's what they produce week after week. So all of a sudden, when things are gone, it takes a while to catch up.
Yeah, I guess. So why is yeast important to bread?
Well, it provides the carbon dioxide that gives the lift, you know, as a leavening agent. So there are alternatives, though when you said no yeast, no problem, I'm not sure I'll agree with that. But meaning there are all the baking powder, baking soda breads, like Irish soda bread and zucchini bread and banana bread. So there is that whole family of breads. And then you have yeast, and then you have sourdough. So there are different ways to get your carbon dioxide in the bread to create the crumb, the structure of the bread.
A friend just gave me a new batch of sourdough starter, and she brought it along with some sourdough bread that she just baked, and it was delicious.
Well, that's the easiest way to get your sourdough from another person, and they should be glad to give you some, because then it's, in a sense, a backup.
Yeah,
creating it from scratch is harder. Yes.
Well, you know, with sourdough, you have to throw away half of it. You make the batch, and I'm trying to. I'm maybe not describing this well, but you're supposed to do away with half of it for some reason. And go ahead.
I don't know where that's coming from.
Well, she took the half that she normally throws away, and she gave it to me.
You would only do that when you're starting, you know, creating your starter.
Okay.
But once you have what I would call the mother starter, a jar in the refrigerator with your active colony, you would feed it. It would maybe double. You'd pour off what you need. You'd put the mother back in the refrigerator, meaning there's no throwing anything out. But when you start, if you want to start from scratch to capture your wild yeast and bacteria in the air, you're going to, you know, it's going to be a mild culture. You're going to feed it. Yes, you're going to throw some away. You're going to feed it again until it gets established. But once it's established, there's no reason to throw anything away.
Carol in Sparta has something relating to sourdough, I believe. Let's go there. Hi, Carol. Carol there? I'm not hearing her, but she was wondering about using sourdough starter instead of yeast, how much proportionally and how long to let it raise.
Well, that's the big issue. I often make bread with yeast and sourdough, meaning two leavening agents. But if you're just using sourdough, you would put in whatever your batch is, you know, let's say a cup and a half of of the wild yeast and bacteria and the flour and the water, but it's living. And then you would use that as your leavening agent, and it's going to take longer, especially when it's colder out. So this, it's very easy to do it in the summer, a little harder to do it in the winter. But the other main thing is reduce your salt. Salt is a tempering agent for yeast. You don't have yeast, you've got the wild yeast, so you want them to grow, so you would reduce the salt in your recipe. But otherwise, however much you want to put in of sourdough, I mean, you could put in a lot, but it's going to take longer to rise.
It's going to take
That's
longer.
That's a big issue. Yeah. And the bakery is doing this every day. They never have to refrigerate their starter, and their room is warm. In a house, it's trickier to do a bread with just sourdough, but it can be done. You just have to have more patience. So,
and when we're talking about more, are we talking in terms of more hours?
More hours, yes, no question. Yeah. You could up the temperature, but it's still going to take more hours. Yeah. I mean, some restaurants or bakeries would have it rise overnight, meaning it might be a 10-hour, 8-hour rise instead of, you know, your 1 or 2 hour rise for yeast bread. It's an experiment. It's science.
It's a great science experiment. Well, Nancy in Milwaukee has a question. Let's go there. Nancy, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Nancy. What's on your mind?
I didn't think I was going to be on. There was a recipe in the journal for something called beer bread, which calls for 1 tablespoonful of baking powder plus a 12-ounce bottle of beer. Well, I do not choose to use the beer, but it occurred to me that if the aeration that the beer gets through its brewing process, is that designed to help the baking powder make the bread raise? Because I don't choose to use the beer, if I would use either apple juice, cranberry juice, prune juice, or a mixture of 1/2 water and 1/2 apple sauce, I don't want to make this substitution because of the fact that flour is so unavailable. I do not want to waste the flour, so I don't want to make a substitute if you think that it wouldn't work.
The carbon dioxide in the beer is not crucial at all, meaning you could use flat beer. So you could substitute other liquids, you know, milk, juices. Yes, the beer is not essential to that recipe. It's more for flavor. And, of course, you have to pick a beer that has some flavor, but, you know, anyways.
Yeah, so she could use, so, you know, if the beer bread recipe called for a 12-ounce bottle of beer, would you put in 12 ounces of apple juice or, you know, something like that?
Sure. Yeah, I'm not sure I'd use apple juice, but you could, depending on what kind of bread you want. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
You know, you can use water, you can use skim milk, you can use buttermilk in other recipes. So many, many liquids can be used, and nowadays it's all about substitution, meaning if you can't find buttermilk, for example, you could use yogurt or use sour milk. So this is what's going to happen for a lot of people, substitutions, you know, playing with the variables.
Yeah, there you go, Nancy. Does that help?
Yes, but does 12 ounces of beer or whatever liquid, along with 3.5 cups of flour, is that a usual ratio of flour to liquid?
It depends on the bread. This is you're using a baking powder bread, so those are typically a little drier. So again, once you put your flour into your liquid, hold back some of the flour. You can always add more, meaning you want to go by the texture, the feel of the dough. Meaning some recipes are just plain wrong, and but you can adjust them, you know, as you go.
Yeah. Nancy, thank you so much for calling. Thomas in Manitowoc. Hi.
Hi. I'd like to say that when you're used to eating really good sourdoughs, you would never eat one of those baking soda breads. I'd have to be starving at a cabin up north someplace to to eat one of those. They just don't have a great texture or flavor once you're used to sourdough. But the way I found to make my sourdough really good now is I start it in the morning, and then it rises for approximately 8 to 10 hours, depending on the temperature. And at that time, it's almost ready to bake. And then overnight, I put it in a cool spot in the house so it can ferment slowly overnight. And that extra long fermentation time just gives it a great flavor, and it's ready to bake in the morning, and it works out really great.
You know what? That sounds awfully good to me, Thomas. I appreciate your call very much, and I'm pretty sure Paul Novak's going to have a comment about that. But I tell you what, we're coming up to the news here. Paul Novak, baking instructor at Madison College and the author of A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More, our guest. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. We'll take a look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Paul Novak. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about bread baking for both the novice and the experienced baker with Paul Novak. He's a baking instructor at Madison College, the author of A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. And he's here to help you with your bread making skills. Join the conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Paul, as we were breaking for news, Thomas from Manitowoc was talking about making sourdough bread. He obviously loves making it. And he's got a long process that essentially it's like 24 hours.
And this is what a lot of people would do with their sourdough. So I do want to compliment him for two reasons. One, he's figured out what works for him in terms of temperature and his sourdough. But it's also that lengthening the process with sourdough or with yeast bread will tend to give you a better bread, a better tasting bread. So it does take experience. And if you have a poor product, let's say, you can always turn it into breadcrumbs. You know, the real failures turn into doorstops, but you know, we don't have to go there. But so you know, taking your extra time with sourdough is the way to go. It reduces the salt but everybody's sourdough is going to be different. I did want to mention North Carolina State University has had some various sourdough projects. So if you go to their website, their current one, I think it's probably number 3, is what would be called citizen science. They're giving people instructions on how to create their own sourdough at home with a very specific process, and then you evaluate it and send them the results. So it's nice in terms of getting information about sourdough, but also for kids, this would be for homeschooling. This would be a real scientific project.
Oh, that sounds great. And so where do we go again for that?
NPR had something on this. You could just look up North Carolina State University sourdough. Do a search engine and it'll pick it up.
NC State.
And the people there have the link. So you've got the link there somewhere, too.
Oh, yeah. I think we have the link on our page, too. So if you go to WPR.org/Larry, you're going to find that information in our notes. So good. Good to have
What's interesting about that is everybody should realize that wherever you get your sourdough from, meaning I got mine decades ago from San Francisco, it becomes a Wisconsin starter, meaning it has the wild yeast and bacteria here. And one house could be different than another. And, you know, even in Wisconsin, we'd have different cultures, meaning it's very, very local. I mean, local, literally, to your city, to your house.
Yeah, interesting.
I'm just saying that's why it's hard for to talk about how long it's going to take. You know, that fellow said 8 to 10 to 12 hours. I'd agree with that. But somebody else might, my sour rye starter is way faster than that. Yeah. So it's a lot of variables.
Heidi in Brookfield has something for us. Hi, Heidi.
Hello. My question is, I have a recipe where they said to put a baking sheet in the oven, then put a cup of ice, then put your dough in the oven. What does the ice and the steam does to the bread?
It improves the crust. So commercial bakeries have steam injectors. This is why it's hard to duplicate bakery bread. So putting water in the bottom, putting ice, all it does is it takes a longer time to evaporate. You're just putting extra moisture into the oven, and this will affect the crust. I will sometimes literally spray my, for example, French baguettes to change the crust.
Oh, there we go.
Or spend a fortune and buy a steam injector oven from Germany.
There you go, Heidi. Thanks for calling. Deb in Plymouth emailed that sometimes she lets her starter get pretty icky looking. When it needs to be refreshed, she stirs it up and makes cheese crackers with one cup of it, and they are delicious.
Well, that is an important thing to consider, the health of your colony. I do mine every 2 weeks. Other people might do it every week. Maybe you can get away with every 3 weeks. If there's a layer of liquid and it looks a little bit gray, that's okay. It just, you know, it just needs to be, you know, fed. Green, yellow, and blue, you do not want. Meaning, you can capture the wrong, you know, organisms. So if every once in a while you got to clean out your jars, do it in glass, don't do it in plastic. So it's a culture. Just I do remind people, once you have a culture, you're responsible for it, for the life of the culture, meaning you can never take a vacation anymore. So, I'm joking. It's another reason to give it to other people. You literally have a backup then.
Yeah, that makes good sense. I can remember years ago, and I may have told you this at one time or another, I had some sourdough starter in my refrigerator and went on a week vacation and came home to find that my refrigerator had died while I was gone. It was summertime, and I smelled something, and I opened the refrigerator door, unfortunately, and everything had been stewing in there for several days, and
I mean, it could, if you have the lid on too tight, since it's creating carbon dioxide, it, you know, it could burst the jar. So you put your lid on not real tight also. Yeah. When you're letting it sit out, I put a wet cloth over it to try to have some airflow, but keep out the other organisms. So, yeah, it's no question it's a little trickier, and it takes practice. It takes time. I will mention that there used to be a place, Gold Rush, that sold dehydrated sourdough, meaning a powder, and you could reconstitute it, feed it and create a culture. That was another easy way to do it.
Carol in Oshkosh, your turn now. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I wanted to talk. I have a question about the sourdough. Can you freeze it? But what I really wanted to talk about is I've been making a no-knead bread. It uses about 3 cups of flour, 1/4 teaspoon of dry active yeast, a little bit of salt, and some warm water. And you just stir that up. So if you only have one envelope of yeast, you can make multiple loaves of bread just from one package. You set it on the counter with a cover on it overnight. The next day, like 18 to 24 hours later, you heat up a Dutch oven in a hot oven, like a 450-degree oven. You give it a couple of tosses in the bowl, and you plop it into that hot Dutch oven after you sprinkle a little cornmeal on it. Cover it up, half hour covered, half hour uncovered, and you have this gorgeous loaf of artisan bread.
Mm.
So for three cups of flour and 1/4 teaspoon of yeast, you can put out a lot of bread, and it's basically almost like no work at all.
Hmm.
Mark Bittman wrote an early article about no-knead bread in the New York Times, so people can look that up. And using a Dutch oven, it's a fairly simple procedure. And you could adapt that to be sourdough also. It's a very wet dough. That's one reason you hardly need it. And it gives an uneven crumb structure, big holes, small holes. Yeah, so it's an interesting kind of bread that a lot of people are doing because it is simple in a sense. But it also does, it still does take time.
Oh, for sure. Carol, thank you. Appreciate it. Mike in Milwaukee, your turn now. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. I have had a terrible time finding rye flour. Any idea what happened?
Rye flour. Mike can't find any.
I'm glad you mentioned that. There must be a lot of people who have decided to make rye bread because it is hard to find. And there, in a sense, there's no substitute for it. Sorry. and I make rye breads. So if you see it, get it. You may have to order it from King Arthur or from Bob's Red Mill, Arrowhead Mills. There are really good sources out there. But yes, I was surprised that all of a sudden, and not everybody even stocks it. I couldn't believe that Whole Foods stopped stocking rye flour. It's like, what was wrong with them? But anyways, other places, I think there are less places that sell it. So I don't understand. It's gone.
But you could at least try to order it online from King Arthur or from where?
Bob's Red Mill.
Bob's
Those
Red
are the
Mill.
Two really good sources. And a lot of stores carry their products. And unfortunately, now there's not bulk anymore. You can't buy in bulk, so you have to buy in packages. And I'd normally want people, to go to local sources, but that was a lot of the bulk, so you may have to get it. You may have to get it online, or just keep going to stores, and a bag will appear.
Okay.
Dry milk has been hard to find.
Oh. Grant emailed that a good way to make bread without baker's yeast is to make a raisin starter. All that's required are organic unsulfured raisins and warm water. To make it, put the raisins in a quart jar, cover the raisins with warm water and cover with plastic wrap. Let it ferment 5 or 6 days until it becomes active with bubbles. You save the raisin water and discard the raisins and use it as your wild fruit starter in your dough.
There's a lot of recipes like that, using apples, using grapes, because a lot of fruit has wild yeast and bacteria on them. I'm just saying that is trickier because you may capture the organisms that create the yellow, the green, or the blue. So it will not always work. That's all I'm saying. And you'll have to have even more patience.
Dennis in Milwaukee, your turn now. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I've been making bread the last couple of days in a Dutch oven, and off the internet the recipe came from that your other listener talked about. And I've mixed the dough, and then I just let it sit and rest for 3 hours, and then bake it in the oven, in the Dutch oven, and it comes out really nice. And if you want the crust a little darker, you take the cover off and leave it in there for about 15 more minutes, and you get a heavier crust. And what my main question, though, is do you have to put sugar when you're making bread like this?
No. Bread does not require sugar at all. It'll keep better with it. Bread does not require oil. And a nice substitution there, if on recipes that call for oil, is use unsweetened applesauce as a binder. So substitutions are encouraged, but yes, a lot of bread only has no sugar and or no oil. So yeah, there's actually sugar in flour, so there's enough for yeast or sourdough to feed on.
All right, there we go, Dennis. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. You know, Paul, when some years back when you were on the show, we would always get questions about from people with bread machines.
Right, yeah, now, you read my mind, yeah.
Yeah, now a lot of them are collecting dust.
Yes, they... I'm glad you brought it up, because I did want to remind people that, you know, if you've got a bread machine, bring it out, and it's a whole other way to do it. So I can't believe I'm encouraging this. But I always did, because some people would mix it or use a timer and then take it out and bake it in their oven. So, you know, you can even modify that whole process. One more thing about yeast, remember cake yeast. Maybe some places have cake yeast as opposed to the powdered yeast. And yeast will be active yeast, but you might find instant yeast, the kind that doesn't have to be put in water. So, again, we will all have to adapt now to what's available.
What are your favorite no-yeast breads?
Well, the person before didn't like non-yeast breads would probably have offended a lot of Irish, who Irish soda bread is not a yeast bread. Banana bread would be a baking powder, baking soda bread. But I'll have to admit, I mostly do yeast breads. But then think there are popovers. I mean, we can keep going with pancakes and waffles and apple skimmers. None of which, you know. But even pancakes, you can make pancakes sourdough. You can make pancakes with yeast. You can make pancakes with baking powder, baking soda. So, yeah, I'm encouraging everybody to, I was going to say go crazy, but no, that's the wrong phrase.
You know,
go
on pancakes.
With your baking, yes.
With pancakes, you mentioned there's a type of flour that you like best for making pancakes, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah, pastry flour. If you're going to make pancakes, waffles, don't even use all-purpose. You'd never use bread. Use pastry flour. It's soft wheat, and it definitely will taste better. You know, no
all
question
right.
of that.
So, Zach from Jackson passed along a question. Zach says, with a shortage of dry yeast, active yeast, he looked for a recipe for yeast starter, and it calls for dried fruit and water as well. And it does it really work in lieu of yeast, and does the reaction create CO2?
Well, no, you would then have to feed that with flour and create a sourdough culture. I mean, that is really what those procedures are supposed to do, meaning your liquid with a little bit of maybe a little bit of flour would ferment, and then you'd have to feed it with flour and create a sourdough starter, which would, again, take, you know, several weeks to really get your culture going. So that's just the start of the process.
Just the start of the process. Hey, by the way, have you been able to teach any of your classes during the shutdown?
No, I'm not actually doing any baking classes. I did that in January. But, my fitness classes, I'm doing a pretty good impression of a sloth here.
And are you baking a lot more? How much bread do you bake, by the way?
I just bake 2 loaves a week usually, but then I might make a pizza, crust, and bake something else. The problem now everyone's having is what do you do with your extra? Yeah. Really, because I usually would give away a loaf here. I'm involved with WRT, so I would often take a loaf down there. Well, the volunteers are doing everything from home now. So everyone, you wonder, where are all these loaves going?
Oh, man. Christina in Glenwood, you have a quick question.
Hi there. Thank you. Tomorrow I'm planning to make pancakes using tiger nut flour for the first time. And my recipe doesn't have a leavening. It has 2 eggs. It has 1/2 cup of a non-dairy milk, vanilla extract, 1 cup of tiger nut flour, 1/4 cup of tapioca flour, 1 pinch of sea salt, and some oil for cooking. I'm wondering, do you feel I would get a fluffier pancake if I used a leavening or even added a little bit of lemon to that milk to make more of a buttermilk style?
Yeah, you would get a fluffier pancake. But there are pancakes like Swedish pancakes that really don't have any leavening. A crepe is really a thin pancake. That doesn't really have leavening. Lefse, which is technically a potato pancake, doesn't really have a leavening agent. So there are pancakes without baking powder or baking soda or yeast or sourdough. So,
yeah.
And tiger nut is another interesting flour. Interesting, I think that more people are going to have to find these more unusual flours. And a lot of them will make wonderful pancakes. I will encourage people to use sorghum flour. It's a very good non-gluten flour with a great taste, better than rice So, and it's local. It's made. It's grown in Wisconsin.
There you go. Thank you, Christina, for calling. Patty emailed that she used seltzer instead of beer in her bread, and it turned out well. So even seltzer can work, Paul. Hey, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It's always a lot of fun. And I'm sorry I couldn't see you in person because you always bring a fresh loaf of bread.
Yes, you were not bribed today.
Yes. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
Okay,
Paul Novak. Yeah, Paul is teaches at Madison College and is the author of a book that I have, A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. Great to have him with us today. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, we'll look at how you can turn any space into an edible garden. That's tomorrow at 11 and Saturday morning at 6 on the Ideas Network. And don't forget, check out our new blog. Just go to WPR.org/Larry to see what's there. Lots of good information there. And thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mealer.